Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
In a world full of straight people, aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race?
RuPaul's Drag Race, may the best drag queen win. Drag queen win.
And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
I'm Matt McConkie. I'm a writer, performer, and host of this podcast about And Just Like That. But now that we've recapped both seasons of the show, I couldn't help but wonder, should I go back and cover the original Sex and the City? The answer, of course, is no, but I can't be stopped, so every week I'll be joined by my very own Mirandas and Charlottes to unpack an episode or movie of their choosing. We're doing Sex and the City Roulette with extra Samantha and none of the Che. And just like Matt, welcome to the show. Welcome back. Happy holidays. I have got a Christmas and Hanukkah treat for you all. We are finally going to discuss the Post-it. And I ain't talking about the ones invented by Romy and Michelle. I'm talking about Sex and the City, Season 6, Episode 7, The Post-it Always Sticks Twice, in which, according to HBO's logline, Carrie agrees to go to bed, a hot new club, in an attempt to get over the post-it traumatic stress caused by Burger. That's right. We're going to be unpacking our collective post-it traumatic stress, our PITS, here today. But I'm not dealing with my pits alone. I'm joined by two beloveds. First one is a writer, director, and star of The Skinny, which was produced by Joey Soloway, premiered at Sundance, won a Webby for Best Series. She's developed and written projects for CW, ABC Digital, Facebook Watch, Hulu, is currently developing a TV series about Jewish-Polish teenagers during Hitler's rise to power, and a musical about Anne Frank that she's going to sing for us today. Jessie Konweiler, hello.
Oh my God. I'm so distracted by how hot you look in these glasses. Oh my God.
Oh, good Lord. They're new. This is a new thing.
You look hot, Matt.
I don't know about these. Thank you for saying that as scripted. And we are also joined by an actor, writer, and comedian. Her work's been featured on Funny or Die, The Huffington Post, Occupy Democrats. Recently, she was on America's Got Talent. You can catch her on her PBS show, SPTV, or on her UCB home team, Baby Todd. But her most prestigious credit is that she is my little brother's girlfriend. Alex Nader, hi.
Oh, hi, Matt. I really do need you to know that I have been truly only been dating your little brother in order to be here now, quite frankly. This
get
was kind of get to this moment.
You've played a long game and you've played it very well.
Yeah, thank you.
The question is, do you think he'll listen? And I don't ask that with any, I don't expect anybody to listen to my podcast, but now that you're here.
I think he'll listen. I think he will listen. I plan to reveal things today that he doesn't know about. So I hope he listens.
Oh,
I hope
baby. I hope so too. Yeah. Has he ever seen this episode of Sex and the City? Like, did he watch it with you?
Okay, Matt, as you know, when we were playing a family round of charades and Kim Cattrall was the thing that you had to do charades for,
yeah.
The man didn't know her name. He couldn't pick her in a lineup. He has no idea who these four women are, which hurts me to my core, but it's okay. It's also, it means that this is just for us.
It's amazing that you're able to still have such a great relationship. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And by the way, Jesse, when we played, we were playing celebrity as a family. And when Kim Cattrall was the you know, the clue that you're trying to guess, the whatever that is. And Brendan's dad, when he was given that clue, we were in the charades only portion of the game. He was, because we had established she's from Sex and the City. Like, you know, I don't need to walk people through how to play celebrity beginning to end. Anyway, the point of the story is just that Brendan's dad had to hump the air and it was very funny. Who cares?
Wait, Brendan is your brother.
Brendan is my brother. We could do my full one-man show if you want, but I was adopted.
Oh, that's right.
Mom is my birth mom. So we've only known each other since 2009.
Fascinating.
Which, yeah, he was like a teenager then and still is.
Yes.
As far as I'm concerned. Jesse, give us your history with Sex and the City, because when I texted you to ask about being on the show, and I just said, like, what is your, like, interest level? You responded, it's very important to me. So say more about that.
I just see, like, the DVDs, like, stacked in my college dorm room. Like, they're, to me, Sex and the City should always be viewed on DVDs, drunk / hungover. And, you know, listen, I think people can say a lot of stuff now about, like, oh, it was whitewashed. You know, I know there's all these, like, problems, but to me, Sex and the City holds up as such a matriarchal piece of art. And it's so important. And, like, before I even knew what these things were, do you know what I mean? Like, all of the things that we learned from Sex and the City about, like, what it means to be a woman and what's a fuckboy and what's getting crumbs from a relationship, you know, female friendships as soulmates, like, before I even had the language for those things, like, it's just such a revolutionary piece of media. Like, Sex and the City is very much my Sopranos. So yeah, it's very important to me.
Same.
I am watching Sopranos for the first time right now, and turns out it's also a very good show. It's not as good as this one. Nothing ever will be. But Alex, you're nodding along.
Yeah.
But the sad truth is you're much younger than we are. I mean, Jesse's much younger than I am. You're much younger than both of us. Mm-hmm. But you are a fan. You are a New Yorker. How did you discover the great works?
Jesse, it's so funny. I also see the DVDs in my mind. Mm. But I remember coming
to
them because
you?
I would.
How old are you, Alex?
I'm 30.
Oh, okay. That's great Sex and the City age watching, though. That's great. Okay.
It is. It's true. I've come to it many times, but the first time I came to it, I was like a young tween stealing my sister's DVDs to view and watch these women. And then seeing it again in my 20s, single, being a New Yorker. Now entering my 30s, I'm like, oh, the content holds. You guys, the situations, what they're saying, how they're dealing with different men, it holds. It really does. In some stuff doesn't, obviously, but the majority of it, I think, does.
Yeah.
How would you characterize those single years? Because obviously I know you as my brother's partner. So that's not a chapter in your life that I got to experience.
I was a hot mess, if that's what you want to know. I was a mess. I was out there taking real bullets in the wild. I was extremely dating in my 20s to the detriment of my mind, body, and soul. But because of that, this show has been a guiding star in a lot of ways, just because, guys, I was a single woman in New York City. I'm still in New York City.
Period.
I guess I'm not single, but I'm still a woman. Period.
Yeah. Jesse, did you live in New York? I don't know if I know this.
I like to say that I lived in New York. What I really did was live in New York like 2 summers during college. But I lived in an NYU dorm right outside of Washington Square Park with no air conditioning. Then the next summer I lived in Chinatown off Mott I slept on an egg crate on the floor. Like, I did it. I was, what do they say about New York? Like, you need to be broke or old and like young and broke or old and rich. So I definitely did young, broke, coke experience, which was great.
Mm. So let's get into this episode, because it opens in such a classic Sex and the City, man. You know, we're getting the hustle bustle of the city. Charlotte's hailing a cab, but she's so happy about being engaged. She gives it away to someone else. And then Carrie, meanwhile, charging down the street, angry as hell, because at the end of the last episode, she received the infamous post-it breakup note from Berger that says, I'm sorry, I can't, don't hate me. Then she sits down for brunch to unpack it with the girls. So let's do that now. In terms of Carrie's worst boyfriends of all time, I'd say Petrovsky number one for me, but then Big and Berger are probably tied for number two. Alex, how does Berger stack up for you?
It's so hard because at first you love him. You're like, oh, is this the guy? Like, they really set it up as if they're so compatible in so many ways. And he gives that like grounded, schlubby vibe that you feel like really juxtaposes someone as sort of like peacockishness of Carrie more so, you know what I mean? And you do wonder if it's just like, does the show need to do a character assassination because we need to move her forward? Or is this a valid reason that he just turns into an asshole? And I think it's a valid reason. I think him not being able to live with her success in this, because they live in the same worlds, is like very accurate. That happens.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That happens. So,
big time.
Yeah, I think Berger is up there with like someone I hate.
Yeah. Jesse, you're a Berger truther, right?
No, I totally agree with Alex. I mean, I am in PTSD of all the fucking loser filmmakers that I dated in my 20s and 30s because...
Speak on it.
I mean, it's so true, Alex. It's like you set it up, and what's so brilliant about her performance and the show is you're like, you see her writer brain working. Like, of course, everything that happened to me and everything I went through with Big and Aiden, it all led to this. And I'm a writer and he's a writer and we're going to be this writer power couple. And it's like every single fucking time I would do that. Like, we're this going to be this filmmaking couple and we'll be at Sundance together. And like writing the movie of your relationship. So I think the show sets it up brilliantly. And
brilliantly.
It's so insidious. The little ways in which she makes herself smaller. Like, I think with Big, she turns into a baby, but with Berger, she's almost like a little teenager, you know, like, oh yeah, we're, you know, spending the night at his house and just like, it's such a tragic performance. So, no, I hate Berger with every fiber of my being. And I love this episode so much. I'm so grateful we're talking about
it. I love
it
too.
It's so healing.
Can I say one more thing that I think is a masterpiece of this show? Is I also think if Berger is like, oh, it's a man who cannot handle her success when they live in the same universe, then an Alexander Petrovsky is brilliant to have next because he takes his work so seriously that she is nothing in comparison. That's the next man. That is the next story, which is another story that we all know so well. When you're with someone who their work comes first, always to the detriment of your well-being.
God, that's very true.
The brilliance of the episode beforehand, what happened, was she was already there. I can't tell you the number of times I've been like, oh yeah, obviously I need to break up with him. Like, yeah, obviously I'm going to do it. But he comes back with this grand sweeping gesture and it's like, yes, I believe. So it was just like, he's cruel to me. And this episode is about Carrie picking up the pieces. And there's been so many times, like I'm thinking of this one guy specifically that he felt very similar to Berger in his like cruelty and the things that he would say to me. And I literally spent the next 6 months just telling anybody that would listen, like, look at what happened to me. And that's the way that we deal with trauma as females and gay men, right? It's like telling the story of what happened, which is such a beautiful episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. You know, I just had a little flashback to something else that happened previous to this episode. And I can't believe I'm like almost going to defend Berger here because that's not where I'm coming from. Please know that. But I'm thinking back to the conversation they had after she read his book, and she really drills down on the scrunchie
thing.
And it's in retrospect, it's also like scrunchies have come in and out of style so many times, and what they mean fashion wise has changed so many times that it's a weird like hill to die on. But it was also like a very annoying note that she didn't seem to like the fact that she is a writer and didn't understand how annoying it was to say that. I don't know. I'm not seeing him in a new light. I'm not. But it's the one
Alex,
area
you
where
take
I'm like,
this?
I don't think she was wrong.
I know. I get it. But that is also so triggering. I don't know. Oh my God. Jesse is also shaking her head with me, feverishly wanting to get in, jump into this. Because it's to deal with artistic men's sensitivities is so wild. Like, I don't have enough space left in my heart anymore to deal with the sensitivities of men. I don't. Like, it was a joke. Your book is published. Move. We gotta move on. Get over that.
Yeah. 100%.
100%. And I will say, this might surprise you guys. So my favorite Carrie relationship is actually Big before he proposed. I think that's when it got like unrealistic and that would never happen to me. And Big also makes an appearance in this episode. And I'm reminded Big can take a fucking joke. There's a self-seriousness with Berger that is so off-putting to me. How many times was Carrie like, you old fucking man? And because Big is confident, he can take a fucking joke. And to me, like, that's a man.
And that's why Big's not her worst boyfriend of all time, but he is up there for me. You know, at brunch, the girls are all trading their war stories about bad breakups. And Jesse, you alluded to a couple. I've had a few of my own. Do either of you have like a post-it equivalent in your own life, whether you, you know, got dumped by someone in a terrible but unforgettable way or did that to someone else?
Jesse, do you have one? I can jump in. I could jump in while you think, because I think I got...
Yes.
There was a time when it was actually a beautiful time while it was good. I was dating a jazz musician in New York.
Wow.
Yeah, trumpet player.
Very Carrie Bradshaw.
Very Carrie Bradshaw. I remember this was, I don't know, this was years ago and he had a blue check mark for a jazz musician. So I remember being like, ooh.
Huge. So
but I remember I went to a jazz club one night. And the song he played was about breaking up with someone. And then he broke up with me that night. And he was like, didn't you get it from the song I played?
Oh, God. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. If you've ever listened to this podcast, you know I'm a huge fan of therapy. It's a big part of my life. Therapy is where I process a lot of the things that we talk about on this podcast. You know, stress about aging or career or navigating a breakup, whether it be romantic or an issue with friends. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Another reason I love therapy is that it helps me to recharge my social battery, especially as we're ramping up for summer. We're all going to be seeing a lot more friends and family. Some of us have, you know, some introverted tendencies. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/likematt today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/likematt. We talked recently about that episode where Carrie doesn't have enough money to buy her apartment and Charlotte eventually gives her her engagement ring to help her get the money. That one always strikes a nerve because it's such a relatable topic because sometimes that paycheck just doesn't seem to come quick enough. But look, life doesn't happen biweekly, so why should payday? The money you earn can be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app, you verify your paycheck, then you access up to $100 a day as you work, leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I know I've got my husband's birthday coming up. I want to give him a nice gift. He's a man who likes the nicer things in life. So that's certainly how I would use the extra money I'd get from Earnin. Download Earnin today. It's EARNIN in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Just Like Matt under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. That's Just Like Matt under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Oh my God.
And did you get it? Did you, when you heard the song?
Of course
were you
I
like,
didn't get it. I was like, this is, all jazz songs have our breakup or love songs. I thought he was just playing a song.
Were there vocals, Alex, or was it just instrument, like slapping on the bass?
Oh, there was a vocalist. She was lovely. I mean, he was trumpet playing and then he was like, yeah, I requested that song to be played so that this moment on the street later on that night wouldn't come as so much of a shock to you. Honey, I was shocked.
That truly feels like a Carrie storyline where you'd be like, okay, this is a great story, but like this would never happen.
Yeah, right,
like,
right.
Because nobody would be that much of a dick.
They wouldn't approve that in the writer's room. It'd be like, that would never happen.
Wow. Jesse, do you have your own post-it experience?
I was trying to think about that. I'm not saying like, oh my God, I've never been dumped, but I feel like guys are so
weak and timid and afraid of confrontation. That like normally it would be like a guy is a prick and then I have to be the one that's like, you know, okay, you know, like let's be done with this.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like there's been like some bumbles where it's been like I haven't been into them and I've been forcing myself because like they were a lawyer. They were not, you know, okay, let me try the nice guy. And then like, they were like, I'm actually not like, really feeling it. And I was like, I was never fucking feeling it. I was just like going, you know, so yeah.
What's yours, Matt?
What about you, Matt? Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, I have like a very dark one. And then I have one that does feel a little more Sex and the City. I mean, the dark one, just very quickly, I was with someone where it was a similar thing where I, like Carrie, was like, well, I have to break up with him because it was fully like, this was the definition of gaslighting, what was happening to me, and just like emotionally abusive over and over and over again. I was like, I'm not only not in love with this person, I don't like him. And yet we're in a serious relationship. Like I hate him. And then he had a very tragic death in the family. And I was like, okay, well, I'm obviously now is not the time. I will stand by him. I will excuse all the bad behavior. And then it continued. And it was like, well, now I really can't say anything because like what he's going through. And then he broke up with me. And I was like, oh, well, okay.
That's the worst.
Why didn't I get... Anyway, whatever. I also once, long, long time ago in my early 20s, you know, was here in LA. Met a guy in a bar who was visiting from San Francisco. We had a little fling. I went to visit him in San Francisco a couple weekends later. And we, of course, go out to a gay bar. And he, as soon as we sit down with our drinks, disappears and doesn't come back for the entire night. And I think goes home with someone else.
Oh my God.
So, you know, that was pretty post-it worthy.
Well, you obviously weren't wearing your glasses because he would have never done that.
I wasn't wearing these glasses. That's right. That was my big mistake.
Like this is a stupid straight girl question. And I'm sorry, but like, you know, within heterosexual relationships.
No, that's my favorite kind.
there are certain dynamics in heterosexual relationships. Like I say, like, yeah, the guys are so afraid of confrontation. I would usually have to do it. Alex nods because she knows, like, there's just patterns. Like, how does that translate with two guys? Like, does one assume the more female role or they're just completely different dynamics with dating behavior?
It's a good question. I think it varies from person to person, but also from relationship to relationship. Like, I think they're like the examples that I've given, I think in the context you're talking about, probably playing the more traditional female role, but I know that I have also been the guy and not in a good way many times. But I don't know. I think in the best relationships, you're like sort of, it's a little more fluid. Anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, bed. We go to bed.
Yes.
Samantha takes the girls to bed. And so that's when Carrie has this awkward run-in with Burger's shitty friends. And it leads to one of my, I forgot this line was in this episode. My, I think, all-time favorite SJP line delivery is when she comes back from talking to them and she goes, we have to get out of here immediately, and downs her champagne and goes, I think that I said that so many times in my like WeHo bar crawl dirtbag days. Sometimes you just got to get out of there immediately.
I also do, guys, do we clock that friend is Michael Showalter, writer of Wet Hot American Summer. Something I love now about watching Sex and the City is how many cameos there were at the time, probably just like day players, working professionals in the world. And then to see them rise up the ranks of our industry has been so wild to go back and be like, oh my God, Michael.
I know. It's amazing. After today, I will have interviewed two people who had a similar experience, but they had like a kind of blink and you'll miss it moment on Sex and the City and then went on to have like a great career after that. But all of them look back fondly on, you know, their moment.
Yeah.
Flying so close to the sun.
Exactly.
Because how could you not?
Yeah.
So Charlotte is newly engaged to Harry. And when she breaks the news to the girls that they're not going to be bridesmaids, they all cheer and we get it. It's like, oh yeah, we don't have to be bridesmaids. But I got to say, I love weddings. I did not relate to that. I love being in weddings. I would have been disappointed to not be a bridesmaid. Alex, I'm bringing this up because I think you are literally on your way to a wedding right after this podcast.
I'm on my way to a bachelorette party right after this.
A bachelorette party. Oh. Okay.
I will be that group of women that puts a veil on Charlotte at the end of this episode. That's going to be me momentarily.
I'm so jealous. I mean, you are really in the thick of this chapter of your life, I feel.
I am in the thick of it. And I don't know if it also is like, it's amazing. I love weddings. I love celebrating my friends. It's awesome. But I will say it hits you like a ton of bricks. Like when it didn't happen in my 20s, I was like, oh, my friends are just not the friends that are going to get married. And no, it's just that all my friends rock and are getting married in their mid to late 30s, as everyone should. And and so it's great, although it's expensive. I have to be real about that. It's expensive process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's also why it's better when it happens a little later, because you're a little less broke. I mean, the weddings I went to in my 20s, I would, if we had to stay at a nice hotel, I mean, I can think of one where we, six people piled into a hotel room, because that's what we had to do. Yeah. And by the way, had time of my life.
Right.
Yeah.
Jesse, where are you at emotionally with the wedding industrial complex?
It's an interesting question, Matt. I mean, I'm 38. I'm very much like with my boyfriend. We want to have a family, all of that stuff, but I don't feel like the yearning in my loins to get married like members of my family feel for me to get married. So my, you know, my first reaction to Charlotte, I mean, Charlotte is like the least of me of the four of them. And I find her so annoying just because I feel like there's this air of, well, my relationships like are real relationships because I'm getting married. And I'm like, fuck you. That doesn't make you fucking special. And like, maybe this is just like me being bitter, but I just feel like there's a lot of people that, and Charlotte's relationship is such a demonstration of this to me. Like if you look at somebody like Smith and Jarrett, like, or Smith and Samantha, they're forming this really like secure bond. And then you look at like, I love Harry, but like you look at Harry and Charlotte and it's like, they weren't even fucking together. They broke up. And then it was like, he had to do this grand gesture of like proposing. And that, like that to me is not a secure relationship. Like I know they worked out eventually and that's great. But to me, it's like everything that's wrong about the superiority complex of people who get married.
Mm. Listen, in Charlotte's defense, she has grown quite a bit since then.
Yes.
But I didn't, that reminds me, I didn't ask either of you, do you identify as a Carrie, a Charlotte, a Miranda, what have you?
You want to know what, Matt? It's so interesting that you say that because you said something so accurate when, and just like that started happening and we started seeing these women get a little older. I always felt like everybody was like, never was a full Charlotte. If anything, they would always be like, oh, a little bit of me is Charlotte, maybe just a little bit. But it was always like, Charlotte was everybody's afterthought. And now I feel like everyone is identifying with Charlotte. Everyone is loving her. And maybe that's just her arc on And Just Like That. That's so funny right now. I think she's like such a comedic breath of like fresh air in the new episodes. But I have always identified with Carrie. And now more and more, I'm like, I love Charlotte.
I do too. And yeah, there's something about the, and just like that version of Charlotte, especially where it's like, we so romanticize the, every, what's happening in this episode of Sex and the City, really, which is like, just got dumped. Like I'm out there. I'm smoking weed in the streets. Fuck men. You know, that is like this sort of elevated state of being in our minds. And Charlotte never wanted to be that. She, the one thing you can say is she was always true to who she was. She never pretended to be that girl. And like that her life can still be, by the way, I've said many times, I prefer Carrie to stay single until, you know, the very end. But life can still be great when you are settled down with Harry and married for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know?
That's such a good point, Alex. It's, I feel like almost they kind of took Miranda's sense of humor and like translated it to Charlotte, because Miranda seems like way too, her arc is so self-serious to me and Just Like That. But honestly, like this episode made me realize, like my biggest takeaway after watching this was like, I fucking miss Samantha. Like here's the thing. To me, they all love each other and they're all best friends. Samantha, in my opinion, is the best friend to Carrie. She is such a warm, we always think of Samantha as crazy. Samantha is so, has such a generosity of spirit and she's so caring. And I just, I fucking love their friendship.
And so maternal. Someone just said this last week and I was like, yeah, that Deanna was like, she has such a maternal energy. And I was like, I've never thought of it that way, but that's exactly what it is.
She's the one who gets the joint. The thing that Carrie wants so badly this entire episode. Like, she's the one who was like, I also got this. I got you. It's a beautiful relationship. I have a question for the group, though. People always ask, like, who you identify with of them. But I want to know, who do you surround yourself with? Do you have friends that are all of those women? Or do you gravitate towards people? Like, I gravitate towards Miranda's. All my friends are Miranda Hobbs-esque human beings. Who do you keep in your space?
God, it's a good question.
It's a great question.
Yeah, when I was younger, I surrounded myself with Samanthas, and just because I was focused on having fun, and I mean, still am. But I think that I am a Charlotte who is surrounded by other Charlottes, and it's hard. It's a mix, and I think I'm still surrounded by some Carries as well, like people who are still seekers. Like that is to me like the epitome of the Carrie spirit. And like that, when you're a Charlotte, you kind of need that energy around you to keep you engaged in the world. What do you think, Jesse?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think friendship, I'm 38, so Alex, you'll see as you get older. Sex and the City, it makes me nostalgic for those college days and for those 20 days where it was really like I had my crew of girls and we would all be together and go out. You know, my life now is very much like, I have a Miranda over here. I have a couple Samanthas over here. I have a Steve, you know, I have a lot of close guy friends. Like I have a lot of Steves and Harrys, a couple Bigs, you know, that I will hang out with. So it's more kind of just like varied, but I will say an arc for me that I'm not super proud of, but it is something that is like happening a lot in my life, is I have a lot of, I'm the Miranda and the Carrie is in a relationship that I'm like, girl, what the fuck are you doing? And I've had a lot of like, okay, sit on it. It's not your business, Jesse. Let them make it's their, you know, but I think that's a whole thing in your 30s of just like who your partners pick and how it affects your relationships. And it's like, it's ended some of my friendships. So it's real.
That is real. That's real. And but were you always right?
I mean, come on. but for me, that's the thing. It's like, I can be very judgmental like Miranda, and like Carrie didn't want Steve. She didn't want Aiden. She wanted fucking Big. Like, that's what some people want. They want that hot, cold, does he crumbs? Maybe, yes. Like, which even if you love Big, I mean, that's what it is. It's insecure attachment style to me. Mm-hmm. And it's like some people want that. So, you know, have a good divorce.
But you don't want to see your friends have that. You don't, you know, that is not the partner you want for your friends.
You know what it is, Matt? When you're a best friend, you're in the relationship too, almost. Like, we tell our friends everything. So I think I just am like, I'm exhausted. I need to go to couples therapy for your relationship. You know, I mean, I don't know. I guess I just need boundaries.
You know, just going back to the Samantha thing, that scene of them smoking the joint together is so great. Because like, I just can't say it enough. Whatever is going on with those two actors off camera, like their chemistry, it's better than any other pairing on the show.
Yeah.
Regardless of gender, they are magic together.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
We'll just say that for the millionth time. And by the way, Samantha in this episode, she's just gotten Smith on TRL. He follows her advice. He goes on the show and says he's not seeing anyone special, which then hurts her, leads her to act out, kiss a random guy in the bar, get in basically a bar fight with these Jersey girls, which brings me to a question for both of you, which is, have you ever been in a bar fight?
No, nothing physical. I got pretty close at a concert once.
What happened there?
I was dragged to like a electric music festival.
Oh, and by my brother?
Yes, exactly. I hate to say, but he dragged me to one. I did not enjoy it. I did not enjoy it. And I had a seat. My coat was on the seat. Went to go to the bathroom, came back, someone was in the seat. And I was like, sorry, you're in my seat. My coat's right there. And the person was so out of it, they were like, that's not your coat. And I said, sir, that's my coat. What are you talking about? It's right there. I could grab my stuff. It's my coat. He goes, it can't be your coat because this is my seat. And I did get into a full screaming match to the point where I had to be escorted out of the concert.
Wow. Folks, sunnier days are a-comin'. Summer's right around the corner. We're all on our wellness journeys, and I can think of no better way to kickstart your new healthy routine than with Factor Meals. And right now, if you go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use our code likematt50, you'll get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription's active. So with Factor Meals, there are 35 different meal options, more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, so you've always got new flavors to explore. You can make your day delicious from breakfast to dessert, everything in between. You'll stay fueled with easy, nutritious options. I'm talking filet mignon. I'm talking shrimp. I'm talking blackened salmon. And Factor Meals are ready in 2 minutes, so no shopping, no prepping, no cooking, no cleanup. Head to factormeals.com right now. Go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use code likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code likematt50 at factormeals.com/likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
Such a good excuse.
Did you just do that as an excuse to leave?
Yes. Like,
Jesse, I feel like you've gotten into some scraps.
Thank you. No, I only just road rage. Like I will get out of my car. Like I need to be better. But I'll like charge. But the funny thing about me is I will like with men, I'm like, let's fucking go. Like I live in Glendale. The amount of like Armenian men that I've been like, let's fucking go, dude. But with women, I'm terrified of women. Like I will always, no matter what, try to keep the peace. What about you?
Smart. The closest thing I've ever been into a bar, this is not a moment I'm proud of, but this was, you know, my younger years, kind of, again, WeHo, barfly, dirtbag, period. But I had one friend with me who was like a perfect angel of a person. It's a long story, but this person, I'm going to say this was just a messy gay boy in a wig and not a drag queen. I make that
distinction
because I would not get into a fight with a drag queen or someone who was like on like a gender journey in that way. Like that was not the vibe. The vibe was just like, this is another like drunken WeHo gay boy who threw on a wig as a joke on his way out. And this person got up in my friend's face and said something very pointed and very mean. And this was just someone who like, I was just a perfect human being that like, of all the people to say something cruel to. And I grabbed this person by the cheeks. Like I went like this. The listeners can't see it. I grabbed them face like this. And I go, you shut the fuck up. I never harmed them in any way, but I did put a hand on them. And that I essentially chubbed their cheeks, listener. That's the best way I can describe the motion that I'm doing is if you chub someone's cheek, you know, you grab them and squeeze the cheek. I go, shut the fuck up. And then they flipped the fuck out and had a handler, this very large man who apparently was with them, swooped in out of nowhere and grabbed this person just in time to pull them back. Because right after I chubbed their cheeks, he kicked his leg up in the air, like full Matrix style. Like I saw the shoe like brush past my nose and just like centimeters away from kicking me in the face and miss. And then they drag this kid out and he's literally like clawing onto the doorway of the bar, trying to not get dragged out of there. And yeah.
That's an amazing
Again,
story.
Again, my proudest moment.
That's very fabulous. Samantha. No, you're such a good friend, Matt.
You are.
You're such a good friend.
You are.
I stand by that like anyone who was friends with this person would have done the same. It was just like, you cannot, this perfect angel. Anyway.
Can I ask
Miranda?
Go ahead.
Please. No, go ahead.
I'm so curious because the club they go to, they go to bed, they go to this great new opening of a club. What's like the craziest opening or bar experience you've ever had? Have you ever been to thematic openings of anything that you were like, this is crazy? Because the idea of a club called Bed in New York City where they're on beds and the bartenders are in in boxers and a sleep mask on their head is crazy. But in this beautiful fantasy New York world that the show has created, it feels possible. And as a New Yorker going on 15 years, it seems so crazy. And yet I'm constantly looking for that experience.
Same. You know, I Googled as you were talking to find out if Bed was real, and it is not. No. But there was a similar place in Miami. This was an actual real trend. There's I don't know what years we're talking, but Yeah, the sleepy time trend, the quick rise and tragic fall of bed clubs.
Oh.
But yeah, I don't know. I was never very cool enough to go to like any club openings of any kind. I mean, I went to the same sort of trashy gay clubs over and over again, but nothing like glamorous. Jesse, you?
But I feel like the trashy is what's glamorous, like especially New York. I mean, honestly, I was just so drunk on so many drugs, like especially New York. I don't really remember, and I don't really need to remember, but I did, you know, from those DVDs, watching the Sex and the City, I remember my parents used to make fun of me because I'd like literally be like, I brought all these huge heels to New York and I'd be like hobbling down the street. And then I'd like roll my ankle and then just, I was the barefoot bitch at the club. That was me. Yeah.
Alex, any exciting club openings for you? You're probably going to one like tomorrow night.
I don't know. I mean, not to that extent. I am someone who has awesome friends in high places, and I kind of just ride on the coattails of that. Like in one of my best friends who now is a Broadway lyricist, but when we were in our 20s, she was hostess at Catch when it was first opening in the Meatpacking District. So that was like a big stomping ground of mine. I would go to Catch. I would go to like the Boom Boom Room on the top floor. I would do all that. But those were like established, huge Meatpacking District clubs. It wasn't like I would go to like any openings. Although I would, but another thing I would cool. always do. Like, those are cool.
Like the Meatpacking District before it became, like when Samantha lived there. Like, I feel like that yes. was the height of it. Yeah.
No.
She put them on the map as far as I'm concerned.
I agree.
The thing that I think is so brilliant about, like, just to go back to the post of it all, is like when it's so real, when you go through like a shitty breakup or a shitty situationship, it doesn't matter where you take Carrie, she's not going to stop talking about it. And like when I had this shitty breakup with this guy, I literally was like, I'm not going to break up with him. I knew I had to break up with him, but I was like, not before my birthday. And I can't do birthday and Valentine's Day. Let me have that. Just give me that, universe. Mm-hmm. And then we had this night where I was like, he was so drunk and he was saying the craziest shit to me. And I was like, I'm going to be single on my birthday. So I like had a birthday party. I invited all his friends. And I mean, and I literally just anybody would listen. I'm like, let me tell you about the shit he would say to me. And it was just so like in my little Betsy Johnson polka dot dress, just like that's what watching the episode reminded me of. I'm like, oh, yeah, you just got to get it out, girl.
Yeah.
You just got to talk shit. You got to talk shit to his friends.
The other thing that I think is brilliant about that scene, it's so good, is because it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. They're saying that they don't like breaking up in any normal way because the girl gets psycho. And then you slowly see Carrie getting psycho. Like it is like, but she's only doing that because she was broken up with in this way. So it's beautiful. It's a multi-layered of like how much the scene is commenting on. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Wait. Brilliant. That's a brilliant point.
Brilliant.
No, you're brilliant, Alex.
Oh. Jesse. Both.
Can I ask a question? And you're very pretty, not just because we look alike. You're very pretty.
We do. We do look alike.
What do you guys think, like, what happened with Berger for him to do that? Why did he do that? Like, take me through the scene of how and why he broke up with her on a post-it.
That's toughie. That is a toughie. I mean, well, he did it in the middle of the night. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
This was a previous episode, so I haven't seen it in a minute. But I don't know. I am picturing him like literally unable to sleep because he's so consumed by insecurities mm-hmm. around. Because he has sort of this like terrible double whammy of like feeling threatened by Carrie as a writer, but then also like not being able to get it up in bed. It's like, right. Like every at yeah. every angle, he was feeling like not enough. And I'm sure he was just like tormented by that.
Also, the show gives us crumbs that he would do this. Do you remember when Carrie bought him the Prada shirt that he was so uncomfortable with that when he was wearing it, he like left her on the street in his on his motorcycle at the opening of Smith's show?
Right.
The show has given us crumbs that he, when he is uncomfortable, he's a fleer. Like they did it a few times in the arc leading up to the Post-it. So I do think that it's like, this is what I do. I'm uncomfortable, but I can't be in this anymore. I'm going to leave a Post-it. And I love that it's a Post-it because that does feel like a man move. I just need to find something I can write on in the space. Oh, there's a Post-it. Yeah. I'm going to leave this Post-it here. I think the show gives us the steps of this person doing this thing. And then the aftermath of how it's written out is also just the nail on the coffin. It's brilliant.
Yeah. It's a murder mystery. And you look back and all the clues were there.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah. You know, in the last scene, you know, you've got the four of them sharing the banana split. And it's just another perfect moment, encapsulates everything we love about the show. And Carrie has this epiphany that about why Berger did this, like kind of answering the question you are asking, Jesse. But then she forgets it because she's stoned. And then that's the end of the story. We never see Berger again. So it has been a recurring theme on this podcast, the idea that Berger must return in season three of Just Like That.
Oh.
So we can finally get some closure here.
Oh.
And as you know, I am the reason that Kim Cattrall came back to the show. Mm-hmm. So I just say that because I think we can really manifest this. So how would you like to see it play out?
I think that it would have to be, I think that we've already done, we're bringing back someone from her past to date her. I feel like if we bring Berger back, I wonder if he has a family. Like he is unavailable. Mm-hmm. He has a beautiful life. I don't know what would happen if like she reenters an affair. Oh, I don't know, but I feel like we can't do Aiden again. We cannot do like,
right.
Oh, someone from her past has come in. They had love once. They're just in a relationship now. There has to be something else.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. But the difference is the big arc for her and Aiden is Aiden forgiving her. And this is a relationship where like she's really the one who would have to do the forgiving.
Right.
Like we've never really gotten to see her want revenge on someone. And I'm sure she's moved on. This was a long time ago and it was a short relationship, mm-hmm. but like there is unfinished business there. And it would just be, and also it could be something professional. Like maybe the tables have turned and I don't remember which guest was pitching this in our little makeshift writer's room, but that Berger is now a successful writer, even more successful than Carrie. And she gets a taste of her own medicine there.
I don't think he's more successful than her. I don't know if this is like cinema, but to me, what happened to Berger, like you guys kind of helped me realize like he's just not capable. Like you wouldn't be mad at your dog for not being able to cook you dinner. Berger is not capable of loving Carrie the way that she needs and deserves to be loved. He just doesn't have it in him. So I honestly think he's in the same apartment. And that exposed brick looked cool when you were in your 30s, but now we're in our 50s and he's still in that studio apartment. I think he had one hit book. Now he's like an adjunct professor at NYU. I think he kind of has some Me Too stuff floating around. Like I think he's still dating, you know, 30-year-olds, but now he's in his 50s. And I think nothing has changed with Berger because he won't go to therapy.
That's great.
That's
and you know
so
what just
good.
Made I thought of our
Jesse,
way
I
in
love that.
Could be that he has hit rock bottom and he has finally joined AA and Miranda sees him at a meeting. And she's like, oh God, I want to tell Carrie, but it's anonymous, but like this is too good. And she has
oh,
to
that's so good,
that.
Matt. That's thing. So good.
That's excellent.
Okay, well, Michael Patrick, if you're listening, we solved another one for you. I will let you go. One last question, kind of going back to Charlotte's storyline, you know, where she's on cloud nine because she just loves the feeling of being engaged. And we talked a little bit about this. And Jesse, I know you've done some Instagram fake outs where you pretended that you and Rufus were engaged, but it was like, I don't know,
that's
announcing
great.
That you got a dog or something. But Alex, just on the topic of engagements, I don't know. I guess I don't have a question. Yeah. I just wanted to say that it's something I'm really interested in with you specifically.
Great. Great. Brendan, if you're hearing this at this point.
Brendan. You know what? Go to the, she'll go to Burning Man with you. He'll do it at Burning Man.
Please. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she'll do it anyway. I mean, also, this might not come out till after, this won't come out till after Thanksgiving, but I'm going to be there for Thanksgiving. I'm going to see you guys.
So I know.
That could also be a fun, I need to be there, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, for the proposal. He now has, he has to get his shit together in a few days to make that happen. Because people will be there. I do actually want something where my friends and family are there. So note.
Well, yeah.
Brendan.
The holidays are upon us. Brendan. Well,
what is Brendan? Like, is he a Steve? Is he a Big? Is he an Aiden?
That's a great question.
I don't know if there's a perfect comparison. He's not a Big.
He's not
and
a Big.
I mean, and that's important to note because I hate Big. And Brendan is just a perfect little sweetheart. Yeah. I mean, he's more, Jeff, much more in the vein of your Aidens and your Steves, mm-hmm. just the heart of gold.
Good guy.
Guys. Mm-hmm. He's just the guy that you want, you know, to be your brother, the guy that you want to marry your friend. You know, he's that, he's that
Wait,
person.
So Matt, you hate Big. Does that mean you love Aiden?
I have grown to love Aiden. At the time, when we were young, I was like, get him out of here. You know, mm-hmm. with his weird like noises and his eating KFC in bed while he shames her for smoking. And it's like, well, you're probably doing something even worse. But I've really grown to love him. You know what? I mean, I'm just repeating myself over and over again on this podcast, but this is what encapsulates it for me. Big doesn't show up for Lily's piano recital, even though
yes.
This is Charlotte's. This is Carrie's family. Carrie doesn't have parents. Doesn't have like Charlotte's family is it. The girls are it. And he can't even fucking bother to show up because he wants to ride his Peloton at home. Great. You deserve to die. Meanwhile,
yes.
You will recall that when they were dating, barely hanging on by a thread, and Carrie was being a total dick to him, Aiden takes like 3 trains to Philadelphia to go to Miranda's mom's funeral.
Oh, right.
Like, he is that person.
Yes.
So I do love him.
Yeah.
But then what do you, I know we have to wrap, but what do you make of Aiden coming back this season, though? Because I'll tell you what is, this revisionist history is very weird to me, how they're like, how Carrie's, okay, fine, Aiden comes back. Great. You're older. You're more mature. You're tired. You're ready for Aiden.
You're tired.
But I was so confused how she was just like, it actually wasn't Big. It actually wasn't Big. It's like, girl, just be real.
I think she's been listening to this podcast and I've been talking to some sense into her. And she was like, yeah, fuck that guy. Like, we had some fun, but yeah, like burn in Peloton hell, Big.
Yeah.
Like, she deserves somebody who's going to treat her like a queen.
But do you know what I wish they would have done? Do you know what I fucking wish?
Tell
Michael,
us.
Call me. I just think it would be such a fascinating story if her and Big are together and then Big gets Me Too'd.
Oh, shit.
Oh, wow. That would have been.
Like, no, every actor that's amazing. Got, like, Jeffrey Tambor. How fascinating would it be if Jeffrey Tambor in Transparent got Me Too'd? And they always want to kill off the men
instead
that
of killing
Me
the character off.
I promise you, when my show's on the air and my lead actor gets Me Too'd, I will work it into the storyline. I can promise you that.
Oh my gosh. I think that he needs to stay as the love of her life in her brain, which is so, until maybe things are being revealed slowly but surely, like almost like she's like coming to her trauma later is, mm-hmm. you know, how that unfolds. Can I tell you what I wanted? I'm so sorry. I have to.
Please.
So, and then just like that, I love that we get like a woman in her late 50s single. That is iconic. I want to see that with Carrie. I love that Charlotte is Charlotte. We get just like a woman who's married with kids that drive her crazy and she's doing her best. Love that. I would have loved to see Miranda enter into a genuinely either open or polyamorous relationship with Steve. I would have loved us not to fucking torpedo. Sorry, I didn't mean to cuss. Not to torpedo that relationship. To keep it as that beautiful thing that we've loved I don't think we needed to torpedo it in order for Miranda to be on a journey. I think they could have stayed together in a genuinely open relationship. And then we would have had to deal with Steve also having sex, but it's okay. And him also out there. Wow. And maybe Miranda has to meet the people he's having sex with, but they're making it work because they are in a beautiful, open relationship.
Alex, I said this not nearly as well, but just last recording of the show, I'm so with you because it's a way that we could keep Steve in the picture. Yes. And like that could be the one good thing that came out of dating Che is that Miranda was like, okay, there are different relationship models. Like everything doesn't need to be, you know, sort of this binary.
Totally. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, once again, we've solved the entire show. Jesse Konweiler, Alexandra Nader, I love you both. Thank you so much for doing this.
Love you guys.
Love you. This is awesome.
And that's our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at And Just Like Matt Pod. And Just Like Matt is a World of Wonder production created and hosted by me, Matt McConkie. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky. And our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.